The act passed by Congress in 1971 brought about shotgun union, which married the place of Native people in their Arctic environment to that of cherished modern American institution, the corporation. And who can be sure of that marriage? I don't know.
Profit and private land ownership were strange and powerful ideas to Alaska Natives when Congress passed ANCSA, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. While ANCSA abolished Aboriginal land title, it did not eliminate traditional Native governments. Now that corporations hold the land, the future of Alaska Natives will be decided in both tribal councils and corporate boardrooms. This is Holding Our Ground.
Funding for Holding Our Ground is provided by the Alaska Humanities Forum, the National Endowment for the Humanities, Rural Alaska Community Action Program, the North Slope Borough, and Zients Pertl Law Firm.
We're trying to extinguish a claim, and we devised the notion to do it with a combination of land and money. And the implication of that was that good things would subsequently happen, because good things generally do happen with abundant land and money. What we were trying to do there was consciously avoid a womb approach of endless trusts. We were really doing some social engineering.
Doug Jones helped write the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act when he was a Senate aide. He calls the act a social experiment, an attempt to avoid some of the hardships of life on Indian reservations. While nobody wanted to repeat past mistakes, ANCSA brought alien organizations to Native culture.
We were trying to accomplish some things socially. We were trying to accomplish some things individually, that is, for individual Natives and not just collectively, and that's why we had a mix of things that had to do with individuals and things that had to do with collectivism. A movement toward business as usual, a movement toward providing a sameness for the Native population, that is, being like everybody else. We probably misjudged the fierceness with which the Native community cared about the land portion of the settlement.
And it appears that Congress and the Secretary of Interior put upon us their own version of its dream for our future. We know now and realize they expect us to eventually turn into mainstream citizens with no basis in the land. This position is contrary to the basic desires of our people, who view the land and continue ownership of the land as necessary for the survival of our way of life.
Lonnie O'Connor echoed hundreds of Alaskan Natives who testified on the effects of ANCSA at the hearings of the Alaska Native Review Commission. During 1984 and 85, Commissioner Thomas Berger visited 60 communities to find out how Alaska Natives view the Claims Act and the changes it brought.
What Congress did was they said, you are all shareholders now, and you have a form of private property known as a share in a corporation, and you do not, as a tribe, own this land anymore. And Congress obviously intended that in 20 years' time, those shares would go on the market, and that people would sell their shares and get money or money's worth, and use the money to buy snow machines or fix up their houses or buy other shares, buy shares in General Motors, that Native ancestral lands would, after 1991, become mingled with privately held lands in Alaska generally, and that there would be nothing distinctive after 1991 about Native corporations. They would just be corporations with some Native shareholders, some non-Native shareholders, and that was clearly the intention. Now, no other settlement that I'm aware of, either before or since, adopted that particular method of settling the claim.
Historically, ancestral lands could not be bought, sold, or lost to creditors. The blanket settlement extinguished Aboriginal title and declared 44 million acres, about one-tenth of Alaska, to be owned by corporations.
Corporate management was as alien to the natives as E.T.
Native governments were left out of the settlement. Now the corporations were landowners. Tribal governments lost much of their influence. When ANCSA was passed, few people understood how corporations worked, and many questioned whether they could replace tribal councils.
In the past, our leaders were the elders who had the knowledge on life from their wisdom and their long life.
Lia Atakatlik.
Now young people as corporate leaders are dictating to the elders, but they don't have the knowledge and the wisdom of the elders. Although young leaders have the knowledge of the white man's way, are they going to keep our traditions and cultures alive?
Corporations brought powerful changes, along with the confusion of roles. Communal values were pitted against individual ones. Competition and profit came to societies that once survived by sharing. Corporate matters were resolved by management and proxy votes, unlike tribal decisions, by consensus. In the villages of southwest Alaska, Yupik elders made their decisions in the Kaski. Yvonne Jones.
Whatever happened and the activities that happened within the community were always scheduled and done by the approval of the elders in the Kazgi, because that was the political unit base of that community. And that is where consensus is derived, and consensus from the governing body of that community was from the Kazgi. And the elders were never disregarded in that respect, because at the Kazgi was where the men slept, where they ate, and where they worked, and where they did all the scheduling and the political base of the community. And the consensus of the community was done in the Kazgi, which in actual essence is probably the Congress of the Native Community.
Aleut, Athabascan, and Inupiaq councils worked in similar ways. Lily McGarvey.
The Aleutians had the chiefs and the councils, the higher chiefs and the lesser chiefs, and they were the ones that decided everything for the villages.
We move a little slow, but the Athabascan systems of government have always been slow.
Spud Williams.
Decisions of any importance usually take 3 years. Consensus government is not a fast government. It's a very, very slow type of government system. But when it's done, it's done. And people can live with it. That settlement was a very, very important document. And it was rushed through without enough discussion, people discussion.
Traditional laws were handed down through generations by word of mouth. When the IRA, or Indian Reorganization Act, was passed in 1934, some villages accepted written constitutions, which were later recognized by the Secretary of the Interior. Other villages continued using their traditional councils. In both cases, elders were the major decision makers. Frances Degnan.
In speaking with the elders, I found out that we as Eskimos have always had councils. They weren't formalized until in our village until 1927. And in 1934, Unalakleet became an IRA council, the Native Village of Unalakleet. They elected their council people, and they looked toward them to do the guidance in the community and to protect what was rightfully theirs.
Sonny Some 200 IRA and traditional governments were functioning when the Claims Act created native corporations. The new corporations were sometimes called modern-day tribes, but they were vastly different. While most corporations are formed to meet a specific business goal, native corporations were not. The 12 regional and over 200 village corporations were first created by ANCSA and then ordered to find a way to survive in the business world. Such a prospect was inconceivable to some villagers who hardly spoke English but were thrust into corporate positions. Walter Tellman of Kinnick.
In the village I'm from, we are pretty inexperienced. Most of our board members became board members when they were young, 18 years old, and very few of us graduated from high school, and we didn't know what corporations were about. And the older people who probably had the knowledge to know how life should have been lived and what was good for us didn't understand corporations. They didn't hardly understand English. So they kind of were out of the picture. And a lot of times I know I make mistakes, and I'm young, I just feel like a little kid. Yet all this responsibility was placed on us to run these corporations. And it's too soon.
There was a misconception of what it took to survive in corporate America.
Gordon Puller of Kodiak.
It was somehow expected that native people could become proficient in the business world overnight. Individuals who had worked on the mechanics of the settlement moved directly into corporate management roles. While these people may have been accomplished politicians, it did not necessarily follow that they would excel as business managers. No one seemed to realize this at the time, and the leaders had good intentions and worked hard. Those qualities, noble as they may be, do not ensure survival in the American business world.
The corporations must follow business procedures under state law. They are required to pursue profits and make equal distributions.
The corporate structure has been set up.
Walter Johnson of Anchorage.
For a person to put whatever amount of wealth that he wishes to put in to that corporation. But no, not the Alaska Native. The Alaska Native put everything, the land, the money, and according to the ANCSA, they put their birthright, everything else into that corporate structure that we hate so much. And we have to live. We never had the choice of how much land, how much money, how much anything. We never had that right, yet the corporate structure is supposed to have been set up under those conditions.
Both congressional and native leaders who wrote the Claims Act felt the corporate structure offered economic opportunity and political clout. Those favoring ANCSA claim enrollment in the corporations brought families together and renewed native pride. Village corporations such as Tanadgusik's on the Pribilof Island of St. Paul are working to maintain cultural integrity. Tanadgusik's president, Larry Merkuliev.
The corporation tries to use cultural mechanisms of group competition rather than individual competition in its operations. Decisions at the management level uses extensively the traditional Aleut methodology of decision-making, which is consensus and conflict avoidance. In planning the port commercial development, the corporation is working with the city and the IRA to develop plans on development control, local hire, training, and other such important concerns with a specific goal that all three share of minimizing negative development impacts and maximizing local participation with maximum control of culture and lifestyle. None of these things would have been possible without the corporate model established under ANCSA and or the seed capital and land control it provided us.
But Merkuliev questions the wisdom of corporate control over ancestral lands.
I believe that a corporate structure under state law is a necessary element to attract outside development, but it is the wrong vehicle for protection of culturally valuable lands because of their vulnerabilities and their profit-centered mandate. Village corporations must divest themselves of carefully identified, culturally valuable lands and hold on to land suitable for economic development unless the shareholders decide otherwise.
Byron Malott agrees. He is president of the Large Sea Alaska Regional Corporation.
Anybody without economic freedom does not have a choice, really, if they're asked to make an economic decision. And I think that's very much the case with Alaska Native people. That is, if the only way we can realize personal economic gain is to sell your stock with the value that it is attached to that, not just from the operations of the corporation, but the value that is attached to the land in the institution, is a very grave problem for the future of ANCSA.
According to Malott, a majority of Sea Alaska shareholders want to separate lands from the corporation, lands that will not be used for development. But Malott isn't sure IRA governments should control the land either.
The IRA issue, I guess what it boils down to for me is that I don't want to exchange one set of problems for another. There may be instances in which it makes eminent sense in one area or one region or one community, but might not be meaningful in some other set of circumstances.
Terry Burr of Ketchikan sees a continuing struggle between Native cultural values and the profit motives of the corporations. Her testimony to the Alaska Native Review Commission is read by Elizabeth Inderud.
I've driven and flown past a lot of clear cuts on the island. The sight to me is depressing. It is ironic that Native corporations are responsible for these clear cuts. I see a tree and a dollar bill on opposite ends of the scale with a Native corporation jumping on the dollar side, making the tree go flying. I hope when my children are my age and someone asks them what's Sea Alaska, they don't say or think profits or dividends. That leaves a sour feeling in my guts. I hope our survival as a people future doesn't depend on whether or not the Japanese are going to build houses. I hope in the future our Native leaders aren't going to be suffering from ulcers caused by worrying about the price of fish and the well-being of the timber market.
You know, I would like to emphasize that we're not against growth and development. We need it for our own people. Our people, our population base is growing and it's developing. We just want to share in the benefits.
Sheldon Ketchite.
And another thing I think that we have a right to do, in addition to initiating, controlling, regulating, and sharing in the benefits of growth and development, is that we would minimize the impact of growth and development on our culture, on our people, on our heritage. Is that too much to ask?
Some shareholders feel they have little influence over corporate decisions. Normally, management has its own way, and other issues are decided by proxy, a far cry from a democratic process. While people want more input into corporate decisions, they don't want to be saddled with more layers of bureaucracy. In small communities, a few people may be obliged to fill many leadership roles. Roland Shanks is land manager of a Klutina corporation.
The typical small village out in the bush has very few economic opportunities. And if somebody is being civic-minded enough to sit on the school board and maybe be on the city council and also maybe be on the board of directors of his corporation, that person, there's just not enough time left over to hold down a economic position that allows that person to essentially stay alive and meet the bills. So we have a problem, I see, that we're essentially asking people to fill a role that leaves them no time for the other roles that they've filled in the past.
The corporation appears to be operating much as any federal bureaucracy, in that all earnings are spent for salaries and expenses of the board of directors and the management
level of our corporations and their subsidiaries.
John Dalton of Seattle.
There are multiple layers of boards and policymakers whose policies are apparently ineffective. This being the case, ANSCA has accomplished a changeover from the white man's bureaucracy to brown bureaucrats.
Some villages have reduced the bureaucracy by dissolving their corporations. The Upper Yukon communities of Vinitai, Our Village, Fish Camp, and Christian Village held elections and decided to retain their lands by handing all corporation shares over to the tribal government. Vinitai Chief Gideon James says he can't see room for two different laws on the same land.
I just feel going along with Alaska Native Land Claim Bill while having our tribal former government, I don't think it seems right to have another law shoved upon us while the IRA former government have still in existence. So the land was given back to the people. But when the title was prepared, it was given to two corporations. And remember, Land Claims Act never wiped out the IRA organization. So we decided to dissolve the both corporations.
On Kodiak Island, the village corporation was overwhelmed by legal requirements designed for large cities. Jack Wick explains.
The type of organization that was necessary to keep it running, we couldn't sustain one here. About 3 or 4 years after it was formed, we couldn't keep a board member. We had to drag people to try to get an annual meeting together to establish a legal quorum that was required. Tribal business doesn't have that requirement. They go about their business, no matter how many people are there, they get the job done. I think the last annual meeting we made the quorum by one person and we had to drag them all the way from the other side of the bay. So that resulted in the board of directors deciding we have to do something. We'd invested some money, we couldn't control it. So the end result, that, you know, regardless of what mistakes were made, is that Larsen Bay does not have a corporation at this time. We're merged with the region.
Besides fuel stations and grocery stores, the corporations have few opportunities to pursue profit in rural Alaska. According to the Department of Interior's 1985 study about the success of ANCSA, only 5 or 6 village corporations out of 200 could have been expected to succeed. Even those regional corporations able to make a profit employ few Alaska Natives. Without changes to ANCSA, the land can be lost through corporate takeover, taxation, and bankruptcy. That is why many people feel commercial development must be separated from control of the land.
We prevailed and were able to gain title, the confirmation of title, to 44 million acres.
John Borbridge.
Now, it may be that the next step is something none of us can foresee. But in terms of looking at the timeless quality of tribes which continue forever and membership which changes, but who are members of something that continues without end, a tribe, then it appears that the next logical consideration is to combine the timeless quality of the tribe with the land resulting in the tribe that is land-based.
Profit-making corporations, anchor corporations, do not speak as tribes.
Fred Paul.
They speak as General Motors speaks, or Ford Corporation, or some profit-making corporation. It doesn't have the power of public opinion. You know, we're not merely addressing the people of the state of Alaska when we speak as tribes. We're speaking to the conscience of the United States.
Native people are different.
Eleanor McMullen of Port Graham.
Maybe I'm thinking we're different when we really aren't, but I think our thinking is totally different. People from that are non-native don't quite understand our way of thinking. And somehow, if we could close those gaps so they can better understand us and we better understand them, I think many good things can happen.
And Elliot's story comes at this point.
Larry Merculeath.
There was a 200-year-old man named Kuyuch. Kuyuch lived in a band which became a village, which became a city. Before, his leaders were elders in the councils, and now they are IRA presidents, city mayors, and corporate presidents. Before, land was used for communal benefit owned by no one, and now it is in lots and blocks owned by individuals. Before, his home was made of the free earth with energy from the earth, and now he must make money to keep the house habitable and apply under some law or with some expense for land to build a home. Before, all his food came from hunting, fishing, and gathering, and now some or most of it comes in wrappers filled with chemicals which he must buy. A little boy asked Kuyuch what he must do to control his future. And Kuyuch replied, "This world is not of our people's making, but it is not too late. White man's words have as many meanings as there are seals in the world's oceans. Study it and choose the road you wish to take, or it will never be of your own making. Do not reject the other worlds. Take the best from it and mold it into yours. And above all, do not follow your mind. Let your mind follow your heart. Your heart contains your people's spirit and courage of generations. Your mind is what you learn today. Do not give up, for with every problem there is a solution."
While corporations and tribal governments find ways to coexist, the remaining Anxa lands are still at risk as long as the law remains unchanged. In an upcoming program, we look at options to save the land and who will make the decisions. For Holding Our Ground, this is Adeline Raboff. This program is produced by Jim Sykes, written by Jim Sykes and Alexa Dvorsen, edited and researched by Sue Burris. Mary Kansewick is our script consultant. Special thanks to the community of Gamble for dancing, singing, and drumming, and also to the Inuit Circumpolar Conference. For more information about this and other programs in this series, write to Western Media Concepts, P.O. Box 215, Anchorage, Alaska, 99510. Holding Our Ground is a production of Western Media Concepts, which is solely responsible for the content.
Funding for Holding Our Ground is provided by the Alaska Humanities Forum, the National Endowment Humanities, Rural Alaska Community Action Program, the North Slope Borough, and Zients Pertl Law Firm.